Welcome to The Word for Today, featuring the Bible teaching of Pastor Chuck Smith of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California. Pastor Chuck is currently leading us on a verse-by-verse venture through the entire Bible. And on today's edition of The Word for Today, we'll be continuing with The Fall of Joash as we pick up in 2 Chronicles, chapter 24, verse 19. And now with today's message, here's Pastor Chuck Smith.
And the prophets came and they began to prophesy against the wickedness, but they would not give ear. And the Spirit of God came upon Zechariah, who was the son of this godly priest, Jehoiada, that had raised Joash. So Zechariah was probably well known to Joash because he is the son of Jehoiada. And Zechariah came and he stood above the people and he said to them, "Thus saith God, why do you transgress the commandments of the Lord that you cannot prosper? Because you have forsaken the Lord, he hath also forsaken you." So the question: why do something in which you can never prosper? Forsaking God, you'll never prosper if you forsake the Lord. Why would you take this path in which you cannot prosper? Jesus said, "What would it prosper a man or profit a man if he would gain the whole world and lose his own soul?" Going after worldliness can never bring you spiritual prosperity. Why would you do it? He said. "And because you have forsaken the Lord, he has forsaken you." Now, they conspired against him, and they stoned him with stones at the commandment of the king in the court of the house of the Lord. So as this prophet Zechariah, the son of Jehoiada, prophesied against what the people were doing, this King Joash, who had instituted the spiritual reforms and all, ordered him to be stoned to death by the people. And thus Joash the king did not remember the kindness which Jehoiada his father had done unto him, but he slew his son. And when Zechariah was dying, he said, "The Lord look upon it and require it." A little different from Stephen when he was stoned. You know, when Zechariah's dying, he sort of said, you know, "God, get even with him. Take care of him." But we remember when they were stoning Stephen in the New Testament, as he was dying, he said, "Lord, lay not this sin to their charge. Receive my spirit." Of course, he had had the example of Jesus. As they placed him on the cross, Jesus said, "Father, forgive them. They know not what they do." The first words of the cross. And then the last word of the cross is, "Father, into thy hand I commend my spirit." Stephen, in his stoning, took the first and the last words of the cross. "Father, don't lay this sin to their charge. Into your hands I commend my spirit." But not so with Zechariah. And of course, the Old Testament prophets were cut from a different cloth. I like them. I can identify with them. I can identify with David as he prays for those enemies of God. "Do not I hate them that hate thee? I hate them with a perfect hatred." And then he says, "Break their teeth in their mouths, smash their noses," you know. I can dig that. I find it hard to turn the other cheek. And yet, because my Lord commanded me to, I do. But that's what submission is all about. You know, submission isn't doing what you want to do. It's doing what you don't want to do. That's when it's submission. It's when you don't want to do it and you do it, that's submission. And I find myself submitting to the Lord a lot. My old nature is just as corrupt as yours. I mean, so he cried out, "Lord, look upon it and require it. Hold them." So it came to pass at the end of the year, the spiritual decline, and at the end of the year, the host of Syria came up against him. They came to Judah and Jerusalem and destroyed all the princes of the people from among the people. These princes that had come to the king and you know, asked that they might again reinstitute the worship of the Asherim, they were killed by the Syrians. And they sent all of the spoil of them back unto Damascus. The Lord did require it of them. For the army of the Syrians came with just a small company of men, and the Lord delivered a very great host into their hand because they had forsaken Jehovah, God of their fathers. And so the host of the Syrians actually were executing God's judgment against Judah. So here it is. God is going to judge these princes for their evil. What does he do? He brings Syria as his instrument of judgment. God oftentimes uses another nation to bring judgment upon his own people. Now, many times the people of God find that difficult when God uses a more wicked nation as his instrument of judgment. Well, I oftentimes wonder just what is worse, being an avowed atheist or avowing to believe in God but living as though God did not exist. And I often think that it is a worse blasphemy to say, "Well, I believe in God," and yet live your entire life as though God did not exist, ignoring God, than just to say, "Well, I'm an atheist. I don't believe in God." When God told Habakkuk that he was going to use the Babylonians as his instruments of judgment against Judah, Habakkuk said, "But Lord, they're more wicked than we are. Is that right?" God oftentimes uses the enemies of his people as his instruments of judgment, and thus was the case. Syria came, just a small group of Syrians. But God delivered the host of Judah into the hand of the small band of Syrians, for God had forsaken them. They had forsaken God, the prophet said, and thus the Lord has forsaken you. It is wrong to think that our country is strong because we have great military technicians, because we have modern instruments of war. The country is strong as it trusts in God, and a nation that forsakes God has really no strength. And that is why I am so deeply concerned for our nation today. We are misinterpreting our history. We are saying our nation is strong because of the free enterprise system. And I hear so many cries for the return of the free enterprise system as we see the weakening of our economy. Our nation is strong because it is a democracy. No, our nation is strong because our founding fathers sought God and founded the nation upon godly principles. And that was the secret of the strength, but it is always true. If you forsake God, he will forsake you. And God forsook them, and thus a small band of Syrians was able to overtake them and was able to take the spoil and carry it back to Damascus. And so they were the instruments to execute God's judgment against Joash. And when they were departed from him, for they left him in great stresses, diseases, His own servants conspired against him for the blood of the sons of Jehoiada the priest. And they slew him while he was in bed. And he died, and they buried him in the city of David, but they buried him not in the sepulchers of the kings. So here's the fellow that had every opportunity to go down in history as one of the great kings. Grew up under the influence of Jehoiada the priest, under his influence and proved the temple's condition, reestablished the temple worship. Could have gone down in history as one of the great kings, but at the death of Jehoiada, the old nature that was there began to reveal itself, and thus he is not even buried in a place of honor. And these are the names of the fellows that conspired against him: Zabab, the son of Shimeath, who was an Ammonitess, his mother, and Jehozabad, the son of Shimrith, who was a Moabitess. Now concerning his sons and the greatness of the burdens that were laid upon him and the repairing of the house of God, they're written in the story of the book of the Kings, and Amaziah, his son, began to reign in his stead. Amaziah was 25 years old when he began to reign. He reigned for 29 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Jehoiada of Jerusalem. And he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord, but not completely. Now it came to pass when the kingdom was established to him. You know, whenever you have an assassination, there's always that turmoil, and it takes a little while for the new government to really get entrenched. You don't know who your friends are and who your enemies are at the beginning. So as soon as he was firmly established, he then slew the servants that had killed the king his father. But he did not slay their children, but followed the law of Moses, where the Lord commanded, saying, "The fathers shall not die for the children, neither shall the children die for their fathers, but every man will die for his own sin." And moreover, Amaziah gathered Judah together, and he made them captains over the thousands and over the hundreds, according to the houses of their fathers throughout all of Judah and Benjamin. He numbered them from 20 years old and above, and he found that there were 300,000 choice men able to go forth to war that could handle the spear and the shield. So he had an army of 300,000 men when he drafted all of the able-bodied men. So he also hired 100,000 mighty men of valor out of Israel for 100 talents of silver. But there came a man of God to him and said, "O king, don't let the army of Israel go with you, for the Lord is not with Israel, or with all of the children of Israel, Ephraim. But if you will go, if you go ahead and do it, God will cause you to fall before the enemy. For God hath power to help, and God hath power to cast down. So don't take these fellows with you. If you do, God will let you fall before the enemy, because God can help you and God can let you down." Very, very true. And Amaziah said, "But I've already paid the guys 100 talents of silver. What shall I do?" And the man of God answered, "The Lord is able to give you much more than this. Just trust the Lord." So Amaziah separated them, the army that had come to him out of Ephraim, to go home again. Wherefore their anger was greatly kindled against Judah, and they returned home in great anger. These guys didn't like being dismissed. They were hungry to go into battle. Because, of course, in battle in those days, you always took the spoils from the enemy, and they were probably hoping to get a lot more than just what they were paid. And going home in anger, Amaziah strengthened himself, and he led his people, and they went to the Valley of Salt, which, of course, is the area of the Dead Sea. And it's still a Valley of Salt there on the southern end. And he smote the children of Seir, Mount Seir, or the Edomites, 10,000 of them, and the other 10,000 they kept alive and carried away captive. They brought them to the top of the rock, and then they threw them over from the top of the rock. and they were all broken in pieces. So they took him up on the cliff and just tossed him all over. Horrible thing, but war is war. And, that is one of the horrors. I personally have an extreme difficulty with the capacity of cruelty in man. Warfare and all, there is within man a capacity of great cruelty to fellow man. I have a hard time with that. I can't imagine treating a fellow human being in such a manner. I mean, I don't care what it is, if they're a human, fellow human being, just because they're of a different nationality or something, just to, want to go out and bash, I can't. I can see reasons for bashing. But when there aren't those reasons, then I can't understand the bashing. And so the soldiers of the army which Amaziah sent back, that is, those from the mercenaries from Israel, they fell upon the cities of Judah from Samaria, even to Beth Horon, as they were going home, those northern cities. And they smote 3,000 people, and they took a lot of spoil. Of course, the men had all gone off with Amaziah to the war, so there weren't that many men left to defend the cities. Now it came to pass after that Amaziah was come from the slaughter of the Edomites, that he brought the gods of the children of Mount Seir and set them up to be his gods, and he bowed down himself before them and burned incense unto them. You say, how in the world can a person turn his back upon the living God and do such a thing? How is it that a person would bow to an idol? Having destroyed the Edomites, now he brings back their gods and he bows down to their gods and worships them. And we find that rather inconceivable until we understand who their gods were. They were worshiping the gods of fertility. They were worshiping them with licentious sexual rites. They were worshiping the gods of power. They were worshiping the gods of money. They were worshiping the gods of intellect. Now, do you have such a hard time understanding why they turn from the living God? There's a tremendous draw in the heart of man for power. There's a tremendous drive in man for money. And of course, there's a tremendous drive for sexual pleasures. And these were the gods of the heathen that they were turning to, that they were worshiping. They were just giving themselves over to sexual indulgences, giving themselves over to worshiping the intellect or gaining power, gaining money. And today, these are the very gods that people turn to when they turn from following Jesus Christ or turn from the true and the living God. It's usually to turn after, and they turn because of some sexual excitement or attraction, or because they get so busy making money that God gets sort of shuttled out of their lives, or they get so filled with possessions that their weekends soon are taken up with their new boat, their new hang gliders, or this or that or the other, and God gets shuttled aside as pleasure begins to rule their lives. Now, we are sophisticated to the point that we don't have a little idol and say, that's my God, that's pleasure, the God of pleasure. You see, we don't make an idol, but we think that just because we don't have an idol, then we're not really worshiping it. But we're more deceived than they are. At least they were honest. You see, it is sort of dishonest to disclaim the worshiping of another god when yet pleasure masters my life, or the desire for pleasure masters my life.
We'll return with more of our study through the book of 2 Chronicles in our next lesson, as we continue with the reign of Amaziah. And we do hope you'll make plans to join us. But right now, I'd like to remind you that if you missed any part of today's message, or perhaps you'd like to order a copy for that special friend or loved one, you can do so by simply contacting one of our customer service representatives, and they'd be more than happy to assist you with the ordering details. Simply call 1-800-272-WORD. And phone orders can be taken Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Once again, our toll-free number is 1-800-272-9673. And for your added convenience, you can order online anytime when you go to thewordfortoday.org. And while you're there, be sure to browse through the additional resources that include Bible studies, commentaries, CDs, DVDs, and so much more. Once again, that's The Word for Today online at thewordfortoday.org. And for those of you who still prefer to write, you can use our mailing address, which is The Word for Today, P.O. Box 8000, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. And be sure to include the call letters of this station with your correspondence. And now, on behalf of The Word for Today, we'd like to thank all of you who share in supporting this ministry with your prayers and financial support. And be sure to join us again next time as Pastor Chuck Smith continues his verse-by-verse study through the book of 2 Chronicles. That's right here on the next edition of The Word for Today. Now, once again, here's Pastor Chuck Smith.
Now as you go, may you continue to seek the Lord. May you be open to the things of the Spirit. And may the Spirit bring you into harmony with the purposes of God, that this week God might be able to use your life in the accomplishing of His purposes as you walk with a heart that is perfect towards Him. And may your life be enriched in all things in Christ Jesus. And may you grow up and mature into that person that He wants you to be, into the measure, the stature, the fullness of the image of Christ. And may Christ dwell in your hearts through faith. And may the Spirit continue His work of bringing you into conformity with the image of Jesus for His glory.
Have you ever seen a person who was once enslaved to an addictive lifestyle, and then all of a sudden they came to know Jesus as their Savior, and they're like a different person? They're happy, they're excited about life, they've become transformed. If you or someone you know has an addiction, whether it be to drugs or alcohol, even prescription drugs, an eating disorder, or a problem with gambling or pornography, I'd like to recommend this year's One Step to Freedom Conference on DVD entitled High Time. Hear guest speakers Mike McIntosh, Jerry Brown, Tommy Cota, and testimonies by Ebo Elder and Hannah Parks.
I can only imagine what this guy's face was just like, wow, you set me free. And Jesus just smiling down at this man as he's been set free.
To order a copy of this year's conference for a friend or loved one, call The Word for Today at 1-800-272-WORD or visit us online at thewordfortoday.org.
This program has been sponsored by The Word for Today in Costa Mesa, California.